The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Yeah, in the words of the country song, you can feel bad if it makes you feel better. You know, at my age, I got a lot of experience. And I noticed that experience is the thing that I have left when pretty much everything else is fading. You know that? I got a lot of experience. Yeah, that's because you don't have that much zest left. I'm Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Zest-filled to be here with you. This is the Friday version of The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls, selected for various reasons. We could probably select every call for a Look Back Friday show. However, certain ones lend themselves a little more easily to extrapolation, talking a little more about what the caller brought up, going off in a different direction that I didn't go off on in the time, talking with a little more detail about a word that they might have used, and I didn't want to stop to talk about that word. So Look Back Friday is just a way to revisit a call and add to it. Or if you want to just push all that aside, and as St. Thomas Aquinas says, follow the self for motivations, I just want to talk more, okay? Just cutting through it. We will get to those calls here momentarily. Andrew edits them, puts them up there, and it's usually a variety of topics coming up. So we shall get to those. This was an interesting survey, and this survey said a lot more than what the survey was searching for. Now, let me explain, Lucy. They asked women and men, are you a good communicator? 92% of the women said, yeah, I am. I'm a good communicator. 92%. You realize that is higher than the percentage of people who have seen Elvis still alive? Think about that. Now, men are notorious for not being the communicators that women say they should be. Well, what do the men think? 90% of the men said, I'm a good communicator. Do you realize how high that is? I communicate for a living, and I think I would be reluctant. Notice I didn't say reticent. People say, I'd be reticent. Reticent means you are not wanting to use a word, not wanting to express yourself. I would be reluctant to say I'm a good communicator. I would have to say, doesn't this sound like a solid psychologist? With whom, where, under what circumstances, and what topics? Now, given that that is, in my opinion, horridly self-inflated, terribly so. It expresses the fluffed up image that we have of ourselves, both men and women, regarding their communication skills. They were asked, are your spouses good communicators? Now, you'd think there'd be some agreement. You maybe say, well, yeah, 70% of the guys said that the women are good communicators, and 62% of the women said the guy. It's below that, because we always generally see ourselves more positively than other people see us. But they asked them. Now, the word plummet comes to my mind. When asked, women, 92% of whom said, I'm a good communicator, 90% of men said, I'm a good communicator. They asked the women, spouse a good communicator? 33% of the women said no. Well, now, okay, that means 67% said yes. Okay, well, that's not too far off looking at it that way. 25% of the men said no. So basically, the guys think the women are better communicators. The women don't think that the guys communicate as well. Now, we men, we have a natural wired-in obstacle. We're not as verbal as women. We are generally not as detail-oriented. We, for the most part, don't talk feelings as easily as women do. These are just differences, and they're established differences by research and by surveys and by common sense and by anybody who's observed marriages of friends and family. By and large, the guys are less likely to communicate about all manner of issues, especially those close to home. And the guys will say to me, it's not natural. I don't share my feelings all that easily. What do I do? My wife says I need to be a better communicator. Well, it's very simple. Very simple strategy. When I ask a guy in marriage counseling, do you know why your wife thinks that? Do you know why she thinks that you don't stick up for her when your mother criticizes her? Do you know why she thinks that you undercut her discipline? Do you know why she thinks you don't follow through on chores around the house? A disconcerting number of times, the guys will say, no. At which I have to stifle myself, the temptation to say, how many decades have you been married? But I don't. I will say, well, why don't you know?
Well, she's told me.
Have you asked her? See, that's the thing about good communication. If you want someone to think that you're a very skilled, interesting conversationalist, very simple. All you got to do is keep the conversation directed at them. Ask them questions. In the case where, for example, the wife feels that the husband doesn't back her up with his mother, who criticizes her, who comments about her parenting, her discipline, her house, whatever. You know, Marie Barone on Everybody Loves Raymond going after Deborah with her comments and critiques. For example, I remember one episode that Deborah put out a punch bowl for a party. And Marie looked into the kitchen and said, some of the hosts are asking, is there a label for the ladle for the punch bowl? Was that your intent? Was that your intent? Another time, I know I'm digressing, but some of these are funny. Another time, Deborah was very, very frustrated about what was going on, and Raymond was not helping her, and she said something like, and I've got all this ironing to do. And Marie said, don't worry, Deborah. I'll walk you through it. So, that was a problem, by the way, with Deborah. She just felt that Raymond didn't stick up for her enough with his mother's comments. Find out. Ask. When do I do that? How do I do that? Tell me what you would like me to do in those situations. Just keep digging. Just keep probing. Now, the danger is you might not like what you're going to hear. And your first impulse is to defend yourself. You don't get much past the first question, because as soon as you ask the question, you hear an answer that doesn't sit well with you, and you've got to defend yourself. Don't. Just keep asking. Keep exploring. And you know what'll happen? I've seen this. if you are interested enough in really getting the nitty-gritty details of why your spouse thinks a certain way about something, that in and of itself can soften your spouse, because at least you're showing an interest. At least you are saying between the lines, I truly want to hear why you think this way. I want to know. I want to understand. That's big. That's really big in a marriage. If you can do that, well, even if you don't change, you're gonna gain some ground by just asking questions and showing interest. So that if you're ever in marriage counseling and the therapist says, do you know why she thinks that way? You can say, yes, I do. And then you can explain it and she can look at you slack-jawed by thinking, I didn't know he understood me like that. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the look-back calls.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
The Encounter Online Virtual Conference is December 27th through the 29th. 15 powerful speakers, prophecy, healing, and impartation. Do you want more?
The truth is, brothers and sisters, there is no solution to the cultural and church crisis but Jesus Christ the Lord, alive in a church that's empowered by the Holy Spirit. Period. That's it. He's finding out right now who's with me, who wants to live in the Spirit of God, who wants to follow me. That's what he's doing. It's going to be a work of God for the glory of the Father glorifying the Son in the power of the Holy Spirit through a people who are alive to him and are proclaiming him with everything they've got.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. There's more to it than reciting the act of spiritual communion. We should begin by having sincere repentance for our sins and affirming our belief that Christ's death redeemed us. Next, we call to mind the spiritual gifts found in Christ's sacrifice and thank God earnestly for them. Now we are disposed to pray the traditional prayer of spiritual communion. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I like these kind of questions. This is fascinating stuff for me. The brain is the most complex thing we know in the universe. Maybe there are more complex things out there from in a material sense. But we don't know of any. The brain is incomprehensibly complex. No, Dr. Ray, it's not incomprehensible. We're studying a lot about the brain. Yeah, that's true. We know a lot about the brain. But there is many times more lots that we don't know. But Anonymous, a female from Texas, is asking a very pertinent question regarding brain healing. Now, what do you know about brainwave therapy for children?
Very, very little. I Googled it after my sister told me she was planning on doing this for my nephew. I advised against it before I even researched any of it, and just from the little bit that I read online, I personally didn't think it was something that seemed like it would be beneficial at all.
What'd you read?
Oh, I mean, honestly, I only read like the first three sentences, but it basically said that it would use, I think it said neurotransmitters to retransmit and rewire the out of whack brain activity in the child's mind, or the child or an adult, depending on who it is and depending on what they have wrong with them. And then top it all off, it's $4,000 out of pocket. And
oh!
I was just like, why would you do that?
You better get a lot of rewiring for $4,000.
Yeah, so I said also, I was like, this isn't going to fix the issues that he's having. And, you know, this isn't just a magic, you know, switch and they're going to all of a sudden he's never going to misbehave again, or he's always going to be a perfect little angel in school or at home. So anyways, I didn't know if you knew anything about it or if you had some advice that I could give her. I would let her listen to the show, actually.
I don't know anything specifically about what this particular group is calling brainwave therapy. However, it's not unusual for the idea that we can rewire somebody's brain. We'll give them certain exercises to practice. We'll do certain things with their eyes. We'll do certain things with a balance beam. We'll have them draw figure eights on the board. We'll do these things that we can design. And what it'll do is it'll reconnect and make right the connections that are out of whack in this kid or this adult. Bottom line is, well, with what I'm familiar with on this, you're absolutely right. Your instincts are absolutely right. We don't have the ability to go in there and quote-unquote rewire this stuff. And the price tag right away quick would make me nervous and suspicious.
Absolutely.
And I suspect, given what you've just said, that your sister is frustrated with her son. And whatever he's doing, whether it's not doing his schoolwork or whether he's a behavior problem or whatever it is. And
you're thinking
she needs to look at herself.
She's going to be listening to this later, but yeah.
Oh, I just got you in trouble, girl.
It's okay. She knows. I already told her. We're close, but I feel like I can tell her what I really think now, at least. But yeah.
One of the things you've tapped into, dear, is oftentimes parents, I call it the search. They want to find out what's wrong with their kid. Why is this kid like this? And the very first place you have to look, now granted, kids all have wildly diverse temperaments, but if you're going to do something about it, you got to look at yourself. You got to say, how am I handling this? What's my discipline like? What is my approach to this child? What can I do better to handle and raise this child? Unfortunately, many parents look for something to fix the child. Let's do brainwave therapy. Let's do balance beam therapy. Let's put the child in individual therapy. And by the way, individual therapy has a very low success rate with kids. Very low.
So let's you would suggest family therapy, right?
I would suggest probably parent counseling.
Okay, because he comes from a divorced family. He has a stepfather and who's active in his life. His real father's not active in his life at all.
See, you've already entered complicating variables.
Yep.
Already.
Very complicated.
And there you go.
He also has spina bifida, and he has he was born with imperforate anus, so he's had many surgeries throughout his life and has a big fear of the doctors in general and hates going to doctor's appointments because he's had a lot of surgeries in his life.
Oh,
and he has a permanent catheter for the rest of his life. Yeah, so.
So the kid's got all, he's got all kinds of stuff impinging upon him. Anytime you come across something that says, we're going to rewire the brain. Now, in a kind of vague, diffuse sense, we can do that. The brain is always rewiring. Always. Okay, it's plastic. In other words, the neural connection. For example, somebody who has a stroke, they may lose, depending upon the extent of the stroke and depending upon where it is, they can lose a lot of functioning. But the brain can rewire itself to gain some or all of that functioning back. That can happen. But in terms of saying, okay, this person thinks this way, or this child behaves this way, we're going to give them some exercises that we've developed to go in there and alter those thinking patterns, those thinking connections. That's when you start to get really questionable. And as far as I'm concerned, there isn't a whole lot of research that supports that. Okay, let's say you watch Jeopardy tonight. And as you're watching Jeopardy, you pick up a few things. in a minuscule way, you just rewired your brain. You added a piece of knowledge. As I said in the call, the brain is always rewiring. You're gaining knowledge. You're losing knowledge. You're forgetting things you used to know. You're adding new things you didn't know. How about if you practice a sport, huh? Well, you actually work on, first of all, the cerebral cortex. And then after a while, it goes into the cerebellum, where it's actually orchestrated in a more skill level. So you have rewired this. You used to be kind of a duffer at golf. Well, but now you shoot in the 90s. You rewired your brain, and then that brain took over your muscle control. So in fact, this whole idea of, well, we're going to rewire a kid's brain and make him function better has a basis in reality. The problem is, again, like anything else, how much of it is necessary? And is there a connection? You know, theoretically, you can say, if he does these kinds of activities, we hypothesize that that will affect his behavior in some way. It will give him greater impulse control. How do you give somebody greater judgment? Judgment is a very complex brain process. It's not located in one area of the brain. So what are you doing here? If there's any improvement, it's going to be placebo. The parent expects that there's going to be improvement. The parent looks for improvement. The child is told this is going to help him. So, in fact, the perception is, and maybe to some degree the kid responds to changes in behavior, and people say, there it was. We had 12 weeks of behavior rewiring, and I'm telling you, the teachers have not complained about him anywhere near as much. That does not at all mean there is any kind of tie whatsoever between the supposed brain rewiring and the child's behavior. This stuff is very, very shaky in its application, in its theory, and it's predicated on the fact that the brain can rewire. It can. It does. The question is, what does it take to do that? If someone has had a stroke and they lose muscle control in certain parts of their body, yeah, with ongoing therapy, they can regain some or all of that function, as I said, but that doesn't change the way they think. It doesn't change more complex processes like judgment and conscience and impulsiveness and virtuousness. It doesn't do that. It's very focused. Focused on getting back those areas of the brain that actually orchestrate the muscles so that they can recover some of their function. The idea that I'm going to give you some vague, diffuse movements. And that's usually what most of these are, by the way. They're some kind of movements. These movements are then going to result in the brain changing where and how. Who knows? Because it's all theory. And then that will translate into a child becoming more mature, more self-controlled, showing more initiative, more impulse-controlled, more academically oriented, better attention span. That is a major stretch, and the research just does not back it up if you're looking for evidence. I've seen a lot of people get pulled into this stuff and then ultimately leave disappointed. Be very, very careful.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer. With Father John Ricardo.
You know, maybe we need to ask ourselves, do we really know Jesus? Maybe another way to ask that would be, how familiar are you with the Gospels? When I was living in D.C., I was on the plane taking a late flight home, sitting next to a young girl. She was probably 16, 17. I had my collar on, and we got talking, and she said, somehow in the course of the conversation, she acknowledged that she was running away from home and was in the midst of an awful lot of difficulties that were going on. Her story seemed to be remarkably akin to the story of the prodigal son, which we just heard this past Sunday at Mass, huh? And so I started to speak a little bit about that with her. And I said, you sound a little bit like the younger son in the story of the prodigal son. And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And I said, are you not familiar with the story of the prodigal son? And she says, no, never heard it. And I just looked at her and I says, oh my goodness, are you in for a wonderful evening?
Relaxing music there. I'm Dr. Ray. This is The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, on these EWTN Global Catholic Radio affiliates. And they do this in coordination with Ave Maria Radio Communications and my producer man there in Ann Arbor, Andrew Kruchek, father of Audra Rose and John. And they're growed up. Andrew, what are they? Is John nine now? Halfway through childhood already? Woo-hoo. I remember when that happened with our oldest. I turned to my wife and said, Andrew is halfway through childhood. I'm well over halfway through adulthood. Way over halfway. And I'm not going to say I'm on the back nine. I'm going to say I'm playing the final three. Glad to be here, though. This is Look Back Friday. I want to piggyback on the brain rewiring question that we pulled from a few months back. And I mentioned in that question that play therapy is really not at all that successful with children. And I wouldn't say half of the parents that come into my office, but it's a good percentage, come into my office because their child has been in some kind of therapy and they've found minimal results, if any, at all. And in many cases, it got worse, not because of the therapy, but because the therapy didn't work, and the child just further got worse because the parents didn't change their approach to the child. So Sarah from Virginia has a 10-year-old son who is in play therapy.
I have a son. He's 10 years old. He's an only child, and he sees virtually a child psychologist every week for 45 minutes. The reason that he sees a child psychologist is because there are some kids in his private school that bully him. And my son, is his personality is very passive. He doesn't stand up. He doesn't speak up. He's a pleaser person. So what I noticed during this psychologist session, they just play video games. So I ask, why is that? And the psychologist say that they are playing because he needs, my son needs to know better, to have a confidence, to let him to be friends first, and then he will start to ask questions about the school, about that. So, but is that the correct approach? So I didn't ask for how many years, it's going to take years, or he's 10 years old, and he, this coming October, he will be 11 years old, so I don't know.
How many times has he seen the psychologist? How many times has he seen the psychologist, Sarah?
Once a week for 45 minutes.
How many times?
3 months.
Three times? Mm-hmm. It's not unusual for a therapist who wants to work with a child to get the child to relax, to mm-hmm. use some kind of game. In the old days, they used to use play therapy, and they'd have different things in their office to use. Well, now, because of technology, they can use video games, which the 10-year-old can relate to. That's not unusual. Mm-hmm. It's not unusual. I think one of the things that you could ask the psychologist is, will you ever be talking to me? You know, will you give me some good guidance on how to deal with my son's nature and how he's mm-hmm. easily intimidated? Okay, can you do that? It's fair enough to say that the psychologist is pacing this and deciding, okay, I want this kid to really feel comfortable with me. Then I can start asking him about these things. That's certainly fair enough. At some point, as the parent, you could ask, how is progress going? You know, what things have you had my son talk with you about? What is he talking about? Are you paying for these sessions?
Yes.
See, sometimes parents get nervous about that, and I understand that totally. They will say, wait a minute, you know, I'm not paying for him to play video games.
Yeah,
I understand
that. They just play video games.
Well, if you get concerned about that, and again, I don't want to second guess any therapist, but if you get concerned yeah. about that, you can go talk to the therapist and say, are you finding out that my son's opening up to you? Is this progressing? Mm-hmm. Because I'm having a little trouble with this amount of money I don't have. So mm-hmm. this is sure. I would suggest that. The other thing I would suggest too is because of your son's special circumstances, in other words, he's not a behavior problem, which is the most common reason they go to psychologists, this could help. He could feel a little more secure. However, by and large, individual therapy with kids is not all that effective. And it's simply because they're kids. You know, the whole talk therapy kind of thing is much more appropriate for grown-ups who can reason and can think with sophistication. So bring your concerns to your therapist and just ask, you know, what's the plan? When do you think you'll be able to get into some of the nitty-gritty here? And what do you think will happen when you stop playing the video games? Will my son open up? These are things you can ask him. Here's the crux, I think, at the core of what's going on. It's the idea that a skilled counselor, and that, of course, adjective, how do you know if a person is a skilled counselor? How do you actually gauge it? But let's just say it's true, a skilled counselor has some special technique of getting inside a child's head, understanding a child, questioning a child, guiding a child, that a good parent doesn't have. That's the whole premise of this, is it not? Which is, you take this child who is being bullied at school, as a kind of a passive kid, maybe a bit of a doormat, and you bring him to a counselor, which, by the way, is very often recommended by the school. The school or the teacher says, well, I'm noticing this going on. Maybe you could get him some counseling. So when parents call me, I say, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to hold off working with a child because I want to see through you what we can do. Because that's a much better and quicker and more long-lasting, durable way to bring about change. That said, if mom here knows her son, and one would assume that mom has mom skills in talking to her son, supporting her son, guiding her son, getting inside her son's head. I mean, most parents can do that. But the reason, the driving, motivating factor, is that supposedly the therapist has professional ways, almost quasi-secretive ways, of getting inside a kid's head. That may or may not be true. That's why I work with parents. Maybe I'll guide them because they're the person to get inside the child's head. They're the one who loves the child. They're the one who has lived with the child, and in this case, in Sarah's case, for 10 years. They know this kid in and out. All I've done is have him come in my office for certain limited periods of time and then try to understand him. I think that's the whole thing that I wanted to comment on this call, which is the therapists have the professional techniques and the mere lay parents don't, and that certainly is not always true.
Hello and welcome to this segment of The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes of the Fathers of Mercy. Sundays and holy days require of the Catholic Christian obligatory Mass attendance. Why is this? Precisely because we love God, not because we fear Him. The Second Vatican Council teaches that the sacred liturgy is above all things the worship of the Divine Majesty. God calls us to Himself, and we want to respond to that call with sacred worship. Apart from illness, for example, the Church teaches that the faithful are obliged to participate in the celebration of the sacred liturgy on all Sundays and holy days of obligation. This is a grave obligation, in fact, and to willfully neglect it can cause one to commit mortal sin. In fact, every Sunday is a holy day of obligation. The Code of Canon Law states clearly that Sunday, on which by apostolic tradition the Paschal Mystery is celebrated, is to be observed in the universal Church as the primary holy day of obligation. Other examples of holy days of obligation, apart from Sunday itself, include the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, on January 1st, the Assumption of Mary on August 15th, and the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin on December 8th. While there are other holy days of obligation established throughout the world, such as the Ascension of Our Lord and the Solemnity of Corpus Christi, national bishops' conferences can dispense the faithful from the obligation for a just reason and even transfer a holy day to be observed on a Sunday. As faithful sons and daughters of the Church, then, friends, let us remember, too, that faithfully attending Mass on Sundays and holy days of obligation brings with it not only an observance of the Third Commandment, but also a faithful adherence to a formal precept of the Church as well. This is the crux of the matter. God bless you, and thanks for joining us.
I have a flashlight. It's great. I use it. It's a case. It's a case for holding dead batteries. That's what I use it for. Dr. Ray, thank you for joining me here when the doctor is in. I looked at one of those height and weight charts, you know. My weight is perfect for my height. It's my height which I think varies. Yeah, to keep it in line. You know, some days I'm 6'1", some days I'm 5'3". It varies. All right, just look back Friday, taking previous calls, and doing a little more commentary on the call in various directions. We have an anonymous father from Oregon who wants to talk about his rifting relationship with his son.
I'm calling about my adult children. I have four. And I have a conversation that has caused me to need to look at and reevaluate how I'm interacting with them. This one in particular, but I think all of them. And the relevant content of the response, I'll read it. You flippantly dismiss me, being called gullible or stupid, implying I'm gullible, stupid, or both. I dislike being called gullible, stupid, or stupid, being flippantly dismissed. So what I come away from is, a nutshell, is basically, well, I have a history as a parent, as a father, who is not real good. I came into the church slowly over time while these children were growing up, so they didn't get benefit of a parent who's has or is developing a really strong moral compass along the way, although finally got there, but they're adults already.
How old are they, sir?
They're in the early to later 30s.
Okay. A couple of questions that struck me while you're talking. Your son says you called him names, you demeaned him. Did you?
Well, I didn't think so. I didn't. This one came at me rather as a broadside, very unexpected. I don't have conversations that have to do with the current culture and morality and politics that you talk about in your program a lot, because of the reason that it's I know it's not going to go well. They are, this one in particular, professed socialists and relativists. The last time I had a conversation like that with him was not a conversation. Okay. I gave him a small book about relativism, and
let me jump in and see if we can get some stability on what he said. Of the four, he is the only one who accused you this harshly, correct?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Okay.
And what's interesting to me is that of the four, this is the one that I make it a point to try to not disclose the fact that he's my favorite.
He is your favorite in your mind. So, in fact, let me see if I got this. This kid, or young adult, or older adult, has heard you in his mind call him names. He's heard you demean him, even though you're saying, I can't recall that. I don't even know if I did. I don't know what's going on. Okay, got that. I would suggest you tell him exactly what you told me. My journey as a father has been one from no faith to faith. Along the way, I learned a lot about myself and about love. In the beginning, I wasn't very good, and I can only say I'm so sorry. I can only say if I said or did those things, and I know the temptation is going to be, but I don't recall it. No, don't do that. Don't do that. He'll just think, there goes Dad making excuses again. If I said or did those things, I am just so very sorry. I can tell you it's not going to happen again. I suspect, Dad, that he is accusing you because, one, you moved toward the Catholic Church, which he seems to have disavowed, which he seems to think is not relevant, or even worse, is to be thrown in the dustbin of human history. So, if that's the case, I could see how his view toward you would be skewed, that he would think that you are demeaning him in your mind because you've become more Catholic, and you even gave him some information, written information, that was designed to make him think a little differently, and he didn't like that one bit. Is my assessment close to what you think?
Yeah. It is.
Okay. Now you can just do damage control, my friend. That's about all you can do. You can acknowledge that, if I had it to do over again, I would much rather have been Catholic from the beginning, because it would have made me a lot better father. I can only hope that you give me a chance to be a good dad again. I think it's fascinating that of the four, the one is the most hostile, which would indicate that it has something to do with his personality. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. The hardest thing to do, one of the hardest, in a relationship is to gauge when and how people are going to misinterpret your meaning or your motive. From what this dad was talking about, he almost said in passing, he said, my son's a socialist and a relativist, which essentially implies he probably abandoned the Catholic Church, and dad is growing into the Catholic Church. So the son thinks we have nothing in common. We look at life very differently. So the most benign thing that dad might say is taken as a put down. You imply I'm foolish or dumb or ignorant. You imply this. Why? Well, because you give your opinion. Now you think to yourself, I didn't imply any such thing. I just told him where I stood about certain things. When you have someone who is overtly hostile to the way they were raised, and they're now a young adult or an adult. I mean, I get calls from parents and 55-year-olds still doing this to them. It takes a while for you to understand how easily they could get offended by something you say that you had no idea would offend them. What is going on here? I have had occasions in my life where someone has said to me things that I supposedly said and did way, way, way back. I mean, we're talking 35 years ago when I was 4. Way back. And I didn't know it. I didn't think they interpreted it that way. But what I find is, more often than not, it's come from people not comfortable in their own skin. Come from people that are hyper-vigilant to any kind of verbiage, any kind of message that would imply that they are not totally, completely respected in every way that they look at life. I think that's what happened here. I'm sure Dad underestimated the kinds of things that he said that the son, in his way of tolerating people, took badly. The sooner you can gauge how someone is going to react to things that you say, the easier you can avoid those things and have a halfway decent relationship with them, assuming they are your family. You may not want to have the relationship with them if they're your friends. There's nothing that says you have to have close relationships to people that are very hard to get along with. There's nothing that says that. But if they're a family member and there are reasons to keep up the contact, it's his son, then you got to get better at recognizing, given his quote-unquote socialist relativistic view of life, that the opinions that you give about certain aspects, what's going on politically, what's going on morally, even what you love about the Catholic Church, can be taken as an implication that you're putting me down. You're putting down the way I look at life. You're putting down the way I think about things. I can't believe that you've done this for so long. My wife came to me once when the kids were little, and she said, why don't we just not do Santa Claus? Why don't we just really go from the very beginning and just talk about Santa Claus based on St. Nick, but it's a nice story, and we're really celebrating Christ's birthday. You know, me being a dutiful husband, I said, well, okay, but will I still get presents? Well, certain people, when we told them that's what we were doing, their immediate reaction was, so you're saying I'm wrong in doing it that way? So you're saying that what I've done, what I did, was wrong? And so we had to say, well, no, this is just our decision for us. We're not telling you what you did is wrong. But they immediately took it that way. And you see what I mean about what you think is a benign thing? I'm going to share with you how I've decided to look at something in our lives, and they immediately inferred that you were commenting about their lives. That happens all the time. All the time. And it happens more often with those people who are hypervigilant to offense and shaky shaky in their self-confidence and needing approval. Speaking of needing approval, I hope Andrew, my producer, is not too mad at me because I'm way past break.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church on Animals, paragraph 2417. God entrusted animals to the stewardship of those whom he created in his own image. It is legitimate to use animals for food and clothing. They may be domesticated to help man in his work. Medical and scientific experimentation on animals is a morally acceptable practice if it remains within reasonable limits and contributes to caring for or saving human lives. It is contrary to human dignity to cause animals to suffer or die needlessly. It is likewise unworthy to spend money on them that should, as a priority, go to the relief of human misery. So the Catechism is quite clear. We have a great duty to exhibit kindness to animals and at the same time understand that animals were created not for their own sake, but for the sake of the human.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I had amnesia once or twice. It's Dr. Ray Garrity. Thanks for joining me here. Coming to a close of The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. Not enough time because calls I have left are longer than the time I have left by a significant amount. Let me read this from C.S. Lewis. Continue seeking him with seriousness. Him meaning God. Unless he wanted you, you would not be wanting him. Doesn't this tap straight into the Catholic Church teaching that the Lord provides that grace for you to seek him? If you want to be closer to God, he's giving you the grace to want to do that. So as Lewis put it, he's not speaking in Catholic Church teaching language, but as Lewis puts it, unless he wanted you, you would not be wanting him. There is a term called prevenient grace in Catholic teaching, which says that that is the grace that moves you. That is the grace that moves you initially toward God. Do you ever think about that? That you are fortunate enough, you are blessed enough to believe. Think about it. Don't you know a lot of people who don't believe? And they don't want to believe. And they are neglectful about the whole question of God. They don't want to consider it. Why? On one hand, you are sad for them and their close-mindedness about the whole thing, and you pray for them. But on the other, you got to be really grateful. And more of my prayer these days is, why me? Why me, God? Why was I born where I was? Why did I have the parents that I did? Why did I return to the Catholic Church? Why? Now, I believe God orchestrated all that. But my natural human inclination is, why? Why in the sense that Am I fortunate enough to know what I know? Wasn't my doing where I was born, country I was born in, when I was born, to the parents I was born. None of that was my doing. It was a gift. I got to keep telling myself that. It keeps me from slipping into being judgmental. Thanks for joining me on this Look Back Friday. Good Lord permitting. I'll see you Monday. Appreciate it, Andrew Krucek, producer man. Walk with God. Continue seeking him. Unless he wanted you, you would not be wanting him.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.